Okay. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 2:03 p.m. on Thursday, April 8th, 2021. And looks like we've got everyone here present. We've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Lebon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. And this afternoon, we'll be hearing public testimony on the House Bill 69 FY22 operating budget, as well as House Bill 71, which is the FY22 mental health budget. And at this meeting, we will be taking testimony in Juneau, Sitka, Petersburg, Delta Junction, Dillingham, Glen Allen, Valdez, Wrangell, Homer, Ketchikan, Kodiak, and Seward from now until 3:30. And if folks could limit their public testimony to 2 minutes, I've got my trusty timer here, Representative Ortiz. Thank you. And since all testimony will be provided by off-net callers, we would ask folks who are calling in to please hang up after your testimony. We want to keep as many lines open as possible or for the other folks who want to call in and testify. And testifiers can continue to access the meeting on your computer through the following website, and that is akleg.gov. Again, that's akleg.gov. And then from there, you'd click on the Live Now button. And then also, the hearing may be televised on Gavel to Gavel. There are three numbers for off-net callers. So if you're listening in, if you got a pen and paper, for those callers outside the Anchorage and Juneau area, please use the following phone number, and I'll say it twice. For Anchorage and Juneau, that is 844-586, or I'm sorry, for those callers outside Anchorage and Juneau, please use 844-586-9085. Again, 844-586-9085. And if you are in the Anchorage area, you can call in at the following number, 563-9085, 907, of course, 563-9085. And then finally, if you are in Juneau, you can call 907-586-9085. Again, if you're calling from Juneau, 907-586-9085. And lastly, if you would like to provide written testimony, you may submit that to the House Finance Committee at the following email address, and that is housefinance@akleg.gov, no spaces in housefinance@akleg.gov. And we will be accepting those emails through 3 o'clock on this Saturday, April 10th. And so with that, we will begin with our public testimony. I will be taking these in the order in which people called in. And so far, looks like I have 28 people who have called in. And with that, we'll start with, I'm not sure if I'm getting your name, your first name right here. Maybe Janie Andreen from Juneau, if you can put yourself on the record and proceed with your 2-minute testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Foster. My name is Jane Andreen, and I live in Douglas, Alaska. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Alaska Public Health Association, and it is in support of the $1.25 million increase that's included in House Bill 69 for public health nursing personnel. Some of you may recall that I've been testifying on this issue in House Finance for the past 5 years. Public health nursing in conjunction with our tribal health system is the cornerstone of community-level public health services. Because of the community engagement and the prevention work that these nurses provide, as well as clinical services, often in communities that don't have other medical facilities, they're often the reason that we don't see more negative health outcomes. Because Alaska has cut approximately $6 million from public health nursing since 2014, we have seen a reduction in services and staffing on the ground. They have had to close 27% of their existing public health centers. They've eliminated 21% of their staff. They've eliminated all well-child exams for children over the age of 6, and they've eliminated all services across the board for anyone over the age of 29, including reproductive health, screening, treating, and investigating sexually transmitted diseases and vaccines. As a result of this, we have seen the number of unintended pregnancies for women age 30 and over to increase steadily. The number of immunizations has decreased by 52% between the years of fiscal year 16 and fiscal year 18. This has contributed up until this year in a threefold increase in influenza confirmed cases. The number of screening and treatment visits for sexually transmitted infections has decreased, and we are seeing as a state an alarming epidemic in both gonorrhea and syphilis, with reported syphilis cases increasing by 293% between 2017 and 2018. We currently lead the country in the number of syphilis cases that we have per population. One of the things that we've been claiming, the Alaska Public Health Association, is that decreasing public health nursing means we have reduced our ability to respond to emergency situations. And it finally happened this past year. Now, fortunately, there has been federal funding that has helped augment and build up a public health emergency response. But this is temporary funding. So we are strongly in supporting the $1.25 million increase. It only replenishes about 20% of what has been cut since 2014. It is definitely a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And just a reminder for everyone, if your public testimony goes beyond the 2 minutes, please do feel free to submit your testimony to us. You can send that to our email address at housefinance@akleg.gov. I don't see any questions for Ms. Andreen. I want to thank you for calling. And we'll move on to the next testifier here. And if folks, when you put yourselves on the record, if you could also state your affiliation. And if you're not with a group, you can just say you're testifying on your own behalf. So with that, we've got Natalie, I think it's Wojcik from Sitka, if you could put yourself on the record.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Natalie Wojcik, the Executive Director at Sitkins Against Family Violence in Sitka, Alaska, and I'm speaking on behalf of my agency today. First, I would like to thank the DPS subcommittee for their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Unfortunately, all domestic violence and sexual assault programs throughout the state that are getting funded through CDVSA received word on April 1st that Victims of Crimes Act funds have been drastically reduced, leaving all of the programs across the state to receive a 30% cut to victim services starting in fiscal year 22. For SAFE, this means we will have approximately a $230,000 cut in 3 months' time. It will have a devastating impact on victims of domestic violence and sexual assault throughout the whole state, including our own community. We've had to start looking at what difficult choices we have to make. If we are to endure the full 30% cut, we are looking to cut our legal advocacy services to victims in half, reduce on-call advocacy for the shelter and sexual assault response, and entirely cut our children's programming. I'm reaching out to let you know what is happening and the dire consequences it will have not only on Sitka, but the entire state. I've worked at SAFE for nearly 12 years, 10 of it I was in direct services, and I've seen firsthand the importance of not only being able to provide safe refuge, but also being able to provide well-rounded comprehensive support services, including supporting someone through the legal system, providing respite childcare when someone's attending a court hearing, and being able to respond to calls at the hospital when someone's physically or sexually assaulted. Alaska has some of the highest rates of domestic violence and sexual assault in the nation, including violence against children. And in 2015, in a victimization study, 1 in 2 women in Alaska stated they've experienced DV sexual assault or both. So please consider allocating state general funds to cover the gaps created by VOCA cuts. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Could you restate the amount that you said was going to be shorted, and was that just for Sitka? I don't think that was statewide. What was that amount again?
Every program that has CDVSA funding throughout the state will receive a 30% cut to our victim services. And for SICA in particular, we will be cut $230,000 approximately.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions?
Thank you.
I don't see any questions. So thank you very much for your testimony. We will move over to Kodiak. Ms. Sabrina Sutton, if you could put yourself on the record.
Jemai, my name is Sabrina Sutton. I'm a LUTIC educator for 23 years on Kodiak Island. I'm also the president of our local teachers association, Kodiak Borough Education Association, which represents 158 certified staff members, including teachers, counselors, and school psychologists in our schools. Right now, we are already seeing a significant number of students returning to their brick-and-mortar schools. On the budget, I want to urge you to use the 2019 enrollment count. 2020 was an extraordinary year, and if we pass a budget using the October 2020 enrollment count, I'm worried our schools will not have the resources we need for all of the students coming back in 2021. So from the teachers in Kodiak, please use the 2019 enrollment count when you are looking at education funding for this budget. Koyana, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? I don't see any questions, so thank you very much, Ms. Sutton. We'll move over to John Lamb in Juneau, if you can also put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My legal name is John, but I go by Jonas. My name is Jonas Lamb, and I'm testifying in my role as the president of the Alaska Library Association in support of the Alaska Library Catalog and SLED, two core library services that benefit all Alaskans. During the 2020 legislative session, at the recommendation of the Alaska Library Association, an amendment to the Alaska State Library's budget for $635,900 for the Alaska Library Catalog, ALC, and SLED resources was approved by both the Senate and the House. The appropriation was then vetoed by Governor Dunleavy. While there was a negative reaction to the veto from legislators, the media, libraries, and the public, the veto was not overturned. The need for this funding remains. It is driven by the past 7 years of budget reductions to library operational funding and comes at a time with unprecedented demand for online resources that support literacy, remote learning, and workforce retraining. The ALC and SLED are important bridges across Alaska's digital, urban, rural divide, and they provide equitable access to important resources to our communities, early literacy, student success, and lifelong learning. SLED resources are highly used, and their use is increasing significantly with COVID-19. For example, in April 2020, the use of BrainPop increased by 156%, while Live Homework Help saw a 30% increase in use over the prior year. The ALC is a network of 85 libraries across the state serving 259,000 borrowers who check out 3.6 million items a year. To maintain both SLED and the ALC programs, sustainable funding is needed beginning in FY22. Requested funding of $635,900 can be appropriated to the Alaska State Library. This is a small investment in Alaska's future. Thank you for your time and service.
Thank you, Mr. Lamb. And the chair of the Subcommittee for Education can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the Subcommittee has funded both SLED and ALC in the Subcommittee. And of course, that'll next go to full finance. But I think Representative Ortiz.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And I don't see any further questions. So thank you very much, Mr. Lamb. Next, we'll move over to Andy Anderson in Dillingham. If you can put yourself on the record and start with your two-minute testimony.
Well, thank you. Can you hear me all right? I'm having a very difficult time understanding anybody listening due to the static.
Yeah, we're actually getting a little bit of static on our end, too. But we can hear you, though. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the State House Finance Committee. My name is Andy Anderson, and I serve on the City Council of Dillingham. And a reminder that Dillingham serves as a Southwest Alaska regional hub, serving 20-plus regional communities and is situated in the heart of the $1 billion Bristol Bay annual salmon fishing industry, the world's largest red salmon producing fishing ground. I am here today to testify on behalf of the City of Dillingham, the mayor, and six members of the City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to present the City's comments with reference to the state FY 2022 operating budget. I will be brief in presenting what we feel are our highest budget priorities and concerns. The City will also submit written, detailed testimony, including answers to questions the committee may have. Mitchell communities throughout the state, the City of Dillingham is operating in a perfect storm of a critical loss of local, state, and federal government financial support, primarily due to, one, the continuing erosion of state funding and federal funding in support of local government functions and services, and two, reduced local revenue related to COVID-19, such as our bed and sales taxes, and three, reduced federal funding in support of infrastructure and maintenance and for maintenance and development. We respectfully request that the FY22 operating budget provide funding to fully capitalize community assistance. We've seen a loss, an estimated loss of 37% of funding between fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 21. A fully funded school bond debt reimbursement, which has been reduced by an estimated 92% between fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 21, provide additional funding for the Dillingham Regional Jail, which serves us, the Alaska State Troopers and Dillingham Police Department region-wide. Though the funding hasn't been reduced, our expenses have increased an estimated 17% between fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21.
I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson, if you could
provide additional funding for the Dillingham DMV office, funding for which was reduced by an estimated 23% between fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21. Fully fund PCE and hold harmless our shared fish taxes based on the fiscal year 19 distribution.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson, if you could please wrap up.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present the City of Dillingham testimony for the fiscal year 2022 state operating budget. And that concludes my testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And so I have down community assistance fully fund, as well as school bond debt, the local jail, DMV, power cost equalization, and the hold harmless on the fish tax. Is that the full list?
That sounds complete, sir, for what I could understand. The static is really bad.
Oh, we're so sorry about that. We've also got that same static on our end, and it's on multiple lines, so I'm not sure what we can do there. Do we have any questions of the committee? No? Okay. We appreciate your calling in, Mr. Anderson. Next, let's go to Max Angelin, calling in from Bethel. If you can put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Max Angelin. I live in Iquitos, Alaska, near Bethel. I testifying in support of HB 69, funding for public broadcasting. I serve as a chair for Bethel Broadcasting Inc. I have been volunteering my time over 20 years toward the station. KYUK Radio, 640 AM.
Mr. Anglin?
Very important.
Mr. Anglin, we're going to take a brief at ease. Okay. House Finance back on record. We're taking public testimony. The time is currently 2:33 p.m. We had problems with static on the phone line, and it was multiple phone lines. We're not sure if it's weather-related. We've had our IT folks look into it, and they're not seeing anything abnormal on our end at this point. Folks are being asked to call back to try to reestablish good lines. And we do have the IT person going to get some tools, so we're going to give this another shot here, and if it continues, then he can do another little maneuver over here. But with that, Mr. Max, I think it was Angelon from Bethel. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and you know what? We're not hearing the static so far, so it sounds good. If you could restart your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I spoke earlier, but somehow I keep saying hello and nobody answered, so we had technical difficulties, I guess, but my name is Max Angelon, M-A-X-A-N-G-E-L-L-A-N. I am calling from Guisluk, near Bethel. I serve as a chairman for Bethel Broadcasting, Inc. I've been volunteering with the station for over 20 years, since 2000, June of 2000. So I am in support of HB 69. I believe it's funding for public broadcasting. It's very important for our area, Kuskokwim and Yukon, Lower Yukon and Lower Kuskokwim, all the villages that receive our signal, especially the last year when this COVID-19 started hitting us. It's been very important for our villages, our people that listen to the radio have proper communications. They need to understand what this COVID-19 is, pandemic. We know that we had, in previous years, had pandemics. This one's different. We needed to understand all of our people. We've been having difficulties with this pandemic. That's why our station and the health corporation of our region, YKHC.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Angelo?
School district in trying to help each other, I guess.
I'm sorry, Mr. Angelo, if you could please wrap up.
Public funding, I support it. Our people need to understand what we're going through. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the committee, so we will move over to Sarah Hansen-Hofstetter, a friend from, used to be from Nome and is now living in Petersburg. If you could put yourself on the record and start with your testimony.
Hi there. My name is Sarah Hansen-Hofstetter, and I am on the board of WAVE, and I'm speaking on behalf of the agency. WAVE stands for Working Against Violence for Everyone and provides critical services in Petersburg. On April 1, all community-based victim service agencies received a memo from the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault stating that the state of Alaska's fiscal year 2021 Victim of Crimes Act funds would be reduced by $4.1 million and that all victim services should expect a 30% cut in their grants. Starting fiscal year 2022. If WAVE loses 30% funding, the cuts will have devastating impacts on survivors, victims, their families, and the community work WAVE is conducting. Please help us by finding a solution to this crisis before the end of the session and consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall for all of Alaska's community-based victim service agencies. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence, including violence against children. Now is not the time to cut life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. I just want to say your music is recognized statewide. I got a note from Representative Edgman asking, is this the musician? So she's well known for that.
That's Thank you so much.
Do we have any questions of the committee? I don't see any questions.
So. I don't. I'm new to stepping up and speaking to the legislature, so I'm quite nervous, and I really appreciate you taking my testimony today.
She does a great job on stage, so thank you very much, Ms. Hansen-Hofstetter. Next, let's move over to Tom Bryce from Juneau, and sounds like we're still getting some of the static, so it's possible we may need to, when that happens, just ask if folks can call back, and we'll try to keep you in the queue. I might go down and write names down here just so that we've got your placement in the queue. So with that, Mr. Tom Bryce from Juneau, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Mr. and Madam Chair, my name is Tom Bryce. I live in Juneau, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself as well as an alumni of UAF, Go Nooks. Mr. Chair, it looks like you've got a nice UAF tie on today. I hope that bodes well for us. I've been tracking the university funding since the late 80s, first as a student and then as an alum of UAF. While it is important to get TVEP reauthorized and encourage the feds to increase its land allocation, it's also important to come up with a real game plan to stop the bleeding. The university is a tool that will generate our engineers, teachers, and healthcare professionals for our state's future, maybe even a few politicians. Coordinated efforts to cross-track COVID relief and infrastructure dollars with real needs the university is facing now can help divert limited general fund dollars back into the classroom to stabilize those needs. On another note, nasty stormy days like today are a good reminder that we need to keep our plow trucks funded and our public buildings maintained. I would hate to have to have landed in Anchorage or Fairbanks during the last week or two, not knowing if the runways were plowed, or for that matter, driving to Costco like I did this morning, unsure whether DOT was keeping the roads clear. So please fund those aspects of the budget as well. Thank you, sir, and stay safe and warm, folks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bryce. Do we have any questions? I don't see any. We'll move on to Melissa Henshaw from Sitka.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Melissa Henshaw, Public and Government Relations Director for the City and Borough of Sitka. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and for your time. I would like to share with you a few of Sitka's priorities amongst our legislative priority list for FY22, the continued reimbursement of school bond debt at 70% as originally agreed to for local governments. The state's proposed budget is half the original commitment for a loss to Sitka of over $1.6 million. We ask for your support for the community assistance program that has decreased by more than half from 2015, in which over $900,000 was budgeted for fiscal year 2022. The state's proposed budget is $415,000 to Sitka. We urge you to have stable and predictable funding for school systems. The state has had and proposes flat funding, yet Sitka's school spending has averaged a yearly increase of 2.57% over the last 10 years. We thank you for the support to the Alaska Marine Highway System and ask for your support to Sitka, which is critical for our transportation system, especially with our limited and full flight service, as it is the link to the rest of the state. Thank you again. Sitka is very appreciative for all that the state does and gives to local governments.
Thank you, Ms. Hinshaw. I don't see any questions. So we'll move over to Chris Eichenlaub from Wasilla.
Hi, this is Chris Eichenlaub. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, I'm calling from Wasilla. I'm testifying on behalf of myself and my grandchildren. So I'm here to lobby for the permit. Everybody else is lobbying.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to lobby for my grandchildren.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Eichenlaub.
How we got here.
Well, I'm
we're
sorry.
We're grossly mismanaging our resources. Some folks are still on the committees that have been mismanaging our resources for the last 6 years. There's no reason why we can't get a statutory dividend when we have record earnings in the CFP. And there's, that's money best spent. We've got grandchildren that have their education fund comes out of that, while we're providing them right now with the worst school systems in the nation, so at least we could give them a college education, don't you think? So if this does a CRB, the CBR, and I don't really know why, and that should have been your speed bump. You should have seen it coming, but we didn't get here from supersized PFDs. We got here from bloated budgets. You know, and I'm going to give you my recommendation how to fix it. Let's repeal SB 26 and take it all out of your hands, because this bill, when it was passed, already had great conflict with original statutes that it was in conflict with, so it should be repealed. You know, at the beginning of the year, we should just announce how much the PFD is going to be. You guys need to decide what formula we're going to use. Are we going to use the POMD, which is bad, or the statutory formula, which goes by earnings, how much the fund actually earns? That's what the payout's going to be on earnings. You know, if you have a bad year, say the stock market crash, you lose 40% of the permanent fund. What's that going to do for the future? You guys will lose your minds, or your head will explode. So let's just take that out of your hands. Just make the formula, announce how much the money is. Give the lobbyists plenty of time to lobby the people for their money, and we can pick, click, and give it out all day. And you guys can get out of there in 90 days instead of 120. It costs us an extra $500,000 in per diem.
Mr. Eichenlaub, can wrap up.
Yeah, I'm wrapping up right now. So let's use the statutory formula that worked for the last 40 years and use, you know, the earnings to make sure it grows forever. You know, and this is the people's money, and it's sitting in the ERA. Let's pay it out now when the people need it the most. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee? I do not see any. Thank you for calling, Mr. Eichenlaub. Next, we've got Rowena Palomar from Valdez. If you can put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I am Rowena Palomar, Executive Director of Advocates for Victims of Violence, located in Valdez. I appreciate Governor Danilidis' recognition of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month and for recognizing the need for more prosecuting attorneys in the Department of Law's budget to respond to sexual assault backlog cases. Thank you to Rep. Merrick and the DPS subcommittee for their work to fully fund victim services through CDVSA. Unfortunately, we just learned that the federal funding for life-saving advocacy and shelter services for victims and survivors are being cut. On April 1st, victim services agencies received a memo from CDVSA stating that the state of Alaska's FY 2021 VOCA funds would be reduced by $4.1 million and that victim services should expect a 30% cut in the grants starting FY 2022. With that 30% cut, Valdez would be cut by 130,000. AVV is the only organization providing services such as emergency shelter, crisis intervention, advocacy, and education to a region of over 1,000 square miles. With a shelter and office located in Valdez, staff must coordinate with other communities and tribal organization in outlying areas to provide resources and develop a network of support for victims and their families. Valdez and the communities that we serve are a 257 road miles east of Palmer and 364 road miles south of Fairbanks, where the nearest shelters are located. Our agency provides critical services in our community. If we lose 30% of the funding, we will be forced to cut our emergency shelter services. We are reaching out to you to let you know that this is happening right now. Please help us find a solution to this crisis before the end of the session, and please consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. Alaska continues to have the highest rate of sexual assault and domestic violence, a number that we can be proud of. This is not the time to cut life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic violence. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Palomar. I don't see any questions. For anybody who might be watching on gavel to gavel or on your computers and are thinking about calling in, we would ask that folks please call in no later than 3:15 just to get your name in the queue, name in the line. So with that, we'll move next over to Rodney Dial in Ketchikan, if you can also put yourself on the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hello, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm the mayor of the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough, and I want to thank Rep. Ortiz for representing our region and for the committee for their work this year. As you can imagine, the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough is going through difficult financial times. During the last year, we've lost over $200 million in economic activity, which has translated into major deficits for our borough and the city. In addition, our citizens are seeing major increases in shipping costs, building supplies, and general inflation. At this point, it appears that major cruise lines will not likely return until 2022 at the earliest, and that has translated into an unemployment rate for our region that's been as high as 17.4%. So with all that going on, it becomes easy to see that our citizens need local government help more than ever, but our ability to provide that help has been greatly diminished by our tax revenues as they have cratered. So for that reason, we desperately need the state to honor its commitment regarding programs like school bond debt reimbursement. I completely understand the state's fiscal condition. However, canceling debt reimbursement was a discriminatory action that only impacted the organized boroughs of the state. At the very least, we need the state to share the fiscal burden equally across all locations and give the areas of the state with the ability to generate economic activity the support needed to do so. So we would ask that you restore school bond debt reimbursement, adequately fund the Alaska Marine Highway System, fully fund community assistance, do not pass on new expenses to the organized boroughs, and look for ways to encourage borough formation as a means to bringing the state's fiscal house in order. We'd also like to see an increased distribution of the American Rescue Plan Act funds given to the state, sent to the areas of Alaska that experienced the greatest financial and fiscal hit from the pandemic, such as Ketchikan. It's an investment in protecting the economy of Alaska. So thank you for your time, and open for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mayor Dial. I don't see any questions. And just for folks who are waiting online and wondering how many people might be before you, we've got about 16 people online, so not that many. With that, next up I have let's see here, Bob Silverston calling in from Ketchikan. If you can state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am Bob Silverston from the community of Ketchikan. I am the mayor of the city of Ketchikan, but I'm speaking as myself. The state has been in a deficit spending mode for too long. We have depleted reserves at an alarming rate. Revenues and expenses just don't match, and I don't believe the state can cut their way out of this. On broad-based taxes, the state would have to implement all of them to make a dent in the deficit. I do not support a draw on earning reserves. I love my grandchildren, and I feel this is stealing from them. The state needs to address the appropriate use of the permanent fund through the percentage of market draw. My suggestion would be 4.75% to be sustainable. I support much smaller dividends and a larger portion to meet the state spending and a more balanced budget. This would be a huge step in establishing the future of the dividend program and success of our state and its state programs. The economic impacts on Ketchikan as a cruise port are substantial and need extra consideration. We went from 1.3 million passengers to zero. We have suffered a $200 million loss in cruise passenger spending, a 60% increase in unemployment, and a $33 million loss in city revenues. As a main driver of the Ketchikan economy, we don't expect to see significant revenues across our port for 23 months at a minimum. Revenue replacement for local governments need to be considered. The federal allotment to Ketchikan from the ARPS fund is $1.7 million, woefully inadequate, though appreciated. There has been a disparity in relief between unified cities and boroughs and those that are not, and that should be addressed in the state's deliberation over the distribution of the ARPS funds. The pandemic has created an economic disaster in our community. We need help, not more expenses. Regarding the American Recovery Act, let's just make sure that the need needs to be appropriate. This time, I'd like to thank you for your.
I think we lost you at the end here, but it sounded like you're wrapping up there, Mr. Silverston, I believe is what. Sievertson. So. If there were no questions.
Yes, a lot of, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. We lost you. Did you have a final comment?
Yeah, the pandemic has created an economic disaster in our community, and we need to help more than expenses. Regarding the American Recovery Funds, we want to make sure that the need meets the appropriations, and I'd like to thank you for your time and your service to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Sievertson. And do we have any questions? I don't see any. So with that, we'll move over to Robert Purcell in Homer, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Robert Purcell from Homer, and I'm a board member of the KBBI Public Broadcasting. I retired as fire chief with the city of Homer and then spent 18 years as a disaster assistance employee with FEMA, including serving as operations section chief on Eagle and Galena floods. In my work in emergency management, I learned that public radio plays a critical role in informing the public and preparing for, responding to, and recovering from disasters in partnership with emergency managers and other agencies. Public radio is unique in this capability. It functions at a local level with the ability to meet local needs, and it functions even when landlines, cell service, and the internet are unavailable. Public radio provides much more than news and the emergency broadcast system. It can cover local meetings, briefings, broadcast available resources and assistance, and provide ongoing critical information in detail and over extended periods of time. It supports not just local and state emergency services. It supports federal agencies, faith-based and other voluntary agencies, and other organizations in assisting individuals, families, and businesses in the impacted areas. KBBI has a formal cooperative agreement for emergency communications with the City of Homer and is currently drafting one with the City of Seldovia. In addition, we have ongoing meetings with Ketchikan Emergency Services and Kenai Peninsula Borough and State Forestry. In summary, public radio is a critical resource for local and state emergency managers and is deserving of state financial support to sustain this emergency capability for our communities across Alaska. I thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Mr. Purcell. And I don't see any questions from the committee, and so we'll move over to Valdez with Roxanne Murphy, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Greetings, House Finance Committee members. I'm Roxanne Murphy, Assistant City Manager representing the City of Valdez. Our Valdez community is asking you to please maintain our DMV office, fully fund the school bond debt reimbursement process, support year-round Alaska Marine Highway operations, and not force our city to pay for misdemeanor prosecutions. This will help with protecting our budget and citizenry, including support for our most vulnerable residents. We thank you for your consideration of these requests and for all that you do to help our Alaska residents and communities.
Thank you for calling in, Ms. Murphy. I don't see any questions from the committee, so we will move over to Jennifer Canfield in Juneau, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Jennifer Canfield, and I am the chair of the KTRO Board of Directors, a nonprofit public media organization in Juneau that produces Gabo Alaska, 360 TV, and provides extensive news coverage of state government and our local community. I'm calling today to voice my strong support for the inclusion of approximately $1.6 million in the operating budget to support rural radio stations, which provide vital public safety alerts, potentially life-saving information, and are important contributors to public media news coverage across the state. KTRO supports the inclusion of intent language that would direct the Public Broadcasting Commission to allocate this funding only to the rural stations, many of which have struggled through the COVID-19 pandemic to maintain local fundraising and underwriting. Without state support, these stations, many of which are the only radio stations for their region, they may suffer further reductions to staff and services. This funding will help replace, upgrade, repair equipment that provides reliable, continuous broadcast capabilities. These stations should always be considered vital state infrastructure. As one testifier mentioned earlier, radio works in the event when other communication technologies are unavailable. While we'd like to see funding restored for all stations in the future, it is most important that we ensure the survival of the smaller rural radio stations at this time. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of funding for rural public broadcasting.
Thank you, Ms. Canfield. And I don't see any questions. So next we'll go over to Dawson Moore in Valdez. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
This is Dawson. Hello, this is Dawson. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dawson Moore. I'm the board president for the Advocates of Victims of Violence located in Valdez. I want to say thank you to Representative Merrick and the DPS subcommittee for their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Unfortunately, we just learned that the federal funding for advocacy and shelter services for victims and survivors is being cut, and this is going to have devastating impacts on Alaska. On April 1st, community-based victim services agencies received a memo from CDVSA stating that the state of Alaska's 2021 VOCA, which is the Victims of Crime Act, funds would be reduced by $4.1 million, and that all victim services should expect a 30% cut in their grants starting in 22. Crime victims should not expect to be expected to bear the brunt of these cuts. These cuts will have a devastating impact on survivors, victims, and their families, our community. During FY20, Advocates for Victims of Violence processed 1,256 shelter nights to 195 different people. They responded to 2,312 crises calls and provided 1,424 in-person crisis intervention to victims and survivors of domestic violence. We are reaching out to you to let you know that this is happening now. Please help us in Valdez by finding a solution to the crisis before the end of the session. Consider allocating state funds to cover the gap created by VOCA shortfall. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence in the country, including violence against children. And when I say some of the, that's being kind. We're generally speaking the worst on all of those lists. Now is not the time to cut the life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic violence. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Do we have any questions? I do have a question. So there's a shortfall in federal funding. And can you describe what happened there? Was it one of the program wasn't reauthorized or what exactly happened there? I know that this just happened recently.
This only happened a couple of days ago, and I've only had brief meetings with the executive director to understand it. I don't believe Rowena is still on the line, but she'd have a better statement on that. We found out about this 3 days ago.
Oh, you know what? Actually, it looks like we've got the executive director for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault on the line, so maybe we can come back to her on that. So appreciate your calling in, and sure. I don't see any questions, so we'll move to the next person, which is Tanya Kvasnikos from Dillingham, if you could put yourself on the record. Tanya, are you there? Maybe we will mark her down we will come back to her after Helen Clough from Juneau, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Helen Clow, and I have lived in Alaska most of my life, almost always off the road system. I've used the Alaska Marine Highway System since 1964 and am currently appalled at the lack of funding and resulting unreliability of the system. When we have to have cuts, reductions in service are bad, but inconsistent and unreliable service is a death knell to the system. I'm no longer able to plan trips that involve the ferry, and recently had to recommend to friends from Arizona that they not use the ferry due to the frequent breakdowns. You guys have got to find a way to increase funding and provide several things. Number one, improve consistent maintenance, some long-term funding for replacement vessels. use of Marine Highway staff when appropriate to do maintenance and repairs rather than sending off to shipyards, and finding some way to have at least two vessels always operating in Southeast so that there is redundancy, and so in the case of a breakdown, people's cars aren't stranded forever. One should remember that the Marine Highway system serves all Alaskans. It is our only connection that does not involve travel through Canada. And we are missing a great opportunity for places like Ketchikan and Juneau and those of us at cruise ports. We would be overrun with independent travelers if we had a bridge ferry system this summer, because they would love to come here when there aren't hordes of tourists. And, yeah, they wouldn't begin to make up for it, but they would help, and the rest of the state as well. And those folks are not going to come because they look at the service and they just can't afford to have the vehicle get stuck. So I really encourage you to find some way to provide stable, reliable funding for the ferry system. This is an essential transportation system, and yes, it is a highway. Thank you very much for considering my comments. And by the way, I'm just representing officially myself, but I think I represent a lot of Alaskans, especially all of us that have depended on the ferry for years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Clow. Do we have any questions? I don't see any. Let's come back to Tanya Kvasnikov. Are you there, calling in from Dillingham?
Tanya Kvasnikov in Dillingham. I currently reside in a shelter. My reason is one of many abuses women suffer. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I cannot tell you where I'd be had there not been a shelter in our region. I am currently and gratefully receiving what I consider life-changing and life-saving support, and it comes from the whole staff. I am asking you all to consider allocating the state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. And I thank you all for your dedicated services. Guyana.
And thank you for calling in. And I don't see any questions of the committee, so we'll move over to Aaron Rupert, calling in from Ketchikan. If you can state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Erin Rupert, and I am the resource advocate at Women in Safe Homes in Ketchikan. I'm speaking on behalf of my agency. I would like to thank Representative Merrick and DPS Committee for their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Unfortunately, on April 1st, victim service agencies across the state received a memo from CDVSA stating that the state of Alaska's fiscal year 2021 Victims of Crime Act, VOCA, funding would be reduced by $4.1 million, and that all victim service agencies should expect a 30 to 33% cut in their funding starting in FY 2022. For WISH, that would be about $320,000. WISH prioritizes direct services for our participants. On this is reflected in our budget. 75% of WISH's budget supports our staff. If we are to experience a 33% budget cut, WISH will lose, at a minimum, our shelter counselor, who has assisted 132 victims in 2020, our child advocate, who supported 60 children of victims in 2020, and our legal advocate, who provided services to over 143 victims in 2020. Shelter staffing would be reduced to one position per shift. Most day services will be eliminated, and most importantly, WISH will not have sufficient staff to respond to sexual assault call-outs, which staff did 42 times in 2020. Ketchikan's economy has been severely impacted by the pandemic and the loss of multiple cruise ship seasons. Local government is facing budget shortfalls due to reduced sales tax revenues. Consequently, they do not have the resources to make up for the lost VOCA funding. I would like you to please consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence, including violence against children. Now is not the time to cut life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rupert, and I don't see any questions. So we will move over to Petersburg. Beverly Richardson, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hi, thank you, Chairman Foster. I'm Beverly Richardson. I live in Petersburg, Alaska. I'm testifying on my own behalf. I'm also a longtime member of local radio station KFSK and serve on its board. I request that you put sufficient funds into the Department of Admin to enable the continuance of public broadcasting in Petersburg as well as other small rural communities in Alaska. Public radio ties our community together and services numerous other outlying and truly remote communities. Even today, many folks in rural Alaska do not have access to internet or television. Public radio gives us up-to-date access to national, state, and most importantly, local news. Our only other means for local news is a weekly newspaper. In addition to local news report, public radio broadcasts the basketball games, the volleyball games, the school board meetings, the borough meetings. It hosts call-in shows with council members, announces school closures and openings, has call-in shows with hospital staff, broadcasts library shows, conducts weekly interviews with the weathermen, announces menu for senior meals, and many important informative announcements. And these are all more important during COVID when we cannot meet publicly. Public radio also alerts and informs the community during tidal waves, tsunami warnings, announces storm warnings, warns the community of road conditions, and reminds folks to bail their skiffs and boats, alerts folks to orcas in the Narrows and Northern Lights. It announces the arrival spring and fall of the sandhill cranes. COVID-19 has been an excellent example of how local radio is essential. Despite lack of critical state funding these past 2 years, KSXK has been vital in informing the public of continuing evolving COVID-19 situation in our community. Covering COVID dramatically increased staff responsibility and necessitated increased costs. Coverage of the virus began last spring with daily one-hour informational local updates and call-ins and continues still a year later with weekly one-hour show local updates and call-ins. These shows have consistently included experts from the schools, the hospitals, the borough, the EOC, and often included outside invited specialists. It is of most importance for you to include funding for public radio into this year's budget. To do so would be negligent in your responsibility to the people of the great state of Alaska. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Richardson. I apologize for the static. It looks like we've got some pretty adverse weather out there, and that's the only thing I can think of that's maybe causing that. But when we do get a lot of static on the line, I'm giving folks a little more time just to make sure that all the information is getting through. So with that, thank you for your testimony. I don't see any questions. So we'll next go to Deborah Hayden in Ketchikan, if you can state your name, your affiliation.
Hello, my name is Deborah Hayden. My position is executive director of an economic development organization in Ketchikan. My career in economic development spans 30 years. And I want to speak about the budget in relation to the permanent fund. Under no circumstances must you spend any excess revenues from the oil price increase on permanent fund dividends. Leave as much money as you can in the permanent fund and in the earnings reserves. This is for the future. The oil will not be here forever. All the policies of the federal government and the world are going toward alternative energies, and the demand for oil is going to decrease, just like it did last year when we were shut down. And the prices are going to go down. And we will not have that as ever a something to rely on, but the permanent fund will be. So it's absolutely necessary to put as much money into the permanent fund and grow it as fast and as possible for the future of Alaska, and that it will be there to close budget gaps in the future. So as much as possible, use the extra money from the oil price increases or any other increases that we have, and institute any taxes you need to institute to close any budget gaps, but do not take that money out of the earnings reserve. That's my testimony. Thank you for wrestling with this budget and for all of your hard work.
And thank you, Ms. Hayden. I don't see any questions. Just a reminder for folks, if you'd like to submit public testimony via email, you can send an email to housefinance@aklegg.gov, and there's no spaces between House Finance, and it's at akleg.gov. So next up, we have Jacqueline Salee from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation. Jacqueline, are you there? Okay, maybe we'll come back to her after we go to Carmen Lowry from Juneau. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, hello. Did you ask for Carmen Lowry?
Yes, Carmen Lowry.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Good afternoon, co-chairs and member of the House Finance Committee. My name is Carmen Lowry, and I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. ANDVSA is a 23-member-based organization that provides a range of life-saving services to victims and survivors. And I share an urgent message with you today, which you have already heard. We are facing an abrupt and unexpected up to $6 million reduction in grant funds. As you have already heard, that on April 1, all of the subgrantees, that's 35, who provide victim services, received this memo saying that we should expect, at a minimum, a 30% reduction in grants that began in FY22 due to the reduction in the federal BOCA funds. So what does this kind of type of cut look like? And you've heard from some other agencies. I have sent to the committee members a table outlining specific agencies, communities, and the cuts, but just to highlight. So consider Anchorage and the community impact. If AWAKE, STAR, Alaska Behavioral Health, Victims for Justice, and Providence Alaska Medical Center had to experience $1 million cut. Rural communities are especially vulnerable.
I'm sorry, Ms. Lowry.
Dillingham, SAFE, and the BBAHC.
Ms. Lowry.
Anticipate a $317,000 reduction.
Ms. Lowry. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. The static has gotten pretty bad. Would you mind hanging up and calling right back, and we'll go right back to you here? Or actually, we'll go to another person, and then we'll come back to you after this one.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Jacqueline Salee, are you there, calling in from Anchorage? No, that was Carmen Lowry just now. But the one prior, the one who didn't... Jacqueline Salee, I don't hear Jacqueline Salee, so we'll go to Tom Abbott.
Yes, Peter. I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, is that Jacqueline Salee?
Yes, it is.
Oh, thank you. Okay, yes, if you could put yourself on the record, your state, your name, your affiliation.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have a TV or radio on in the background? Oh, maybe if you could turn that off. And it sounds like you're very far away now. At first, we could hear you just fine, but now you sound like you're a long way away.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Jacqueline Salee, and I'm a lifelong resident of Anchorage, Alaska, and am of Inupiaq descent. I'm the granddaughter of Lena and John Anungatoguk, originally from Shishmaref, Alaska. I'm the president and CEO of KNBA Public Radio Station, serving Anchorage and the Mat-Su area with news, culture, and a special emphasis in serving the Alaska Native population. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today regarding the FY22 operating budget. I understand the difficult decisions you all are being faced with during these difficult times. I am specifically calling in to testify regarding support to partially fund and restore funding to the Department of Administration for Public Radio Stations. Specifically, we are requesting that funding be at approximately $1.6 million with intent language that directs the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission to allocate funds to radio stations in the smaller stations throughout the state.
I know that my station, KMBA, is willing to forego state funding in the hopes that more vulnerable stations across Alaska are able to survive. Stations like KYUK, KCUK, KOTZ in Kotzebue, and KSKO in McGrath. These stations provide vital public safety alerts and potentially life-saving information in communities with limited media and internet access. A large number of these stations are the only radio provider in their region. The financial crisis caused in response to mitigating the spread of COVID-19 has had a deeper impact on rural communities. Most of these stations do not have the financial reserves to sustain the business continuity through a prolonged financial crisis. Therefore, I'd like to request that the House Finance Committee fund public radio stations, especially in rural areas, to operate at a basic level. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Sully. It's a big state but small population. I've got my neighbors across the street are the Nungatuggooks, and great folks there. So sounds like I think you're probably related. We're going to go back to, I don't see any questions, so we'll go back to Carmen Lowry. Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, great. Thank you. I don't hear any static, so I think we're off to a good start here. Can you repeat your name, your affiliation, and maybe start over? I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Thank you. So good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Carmen Lowry. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. ANDVSA is a 23-member-based organization that provides a range of life-saving services to victims and survivors. And like others that you have heard from, I come today to share an urgent message. We are facing an abrupt and unexpected up to $6 million reduction in grant funds. As you already heard, on April 1, all of the subgrantees, 35 of us who provide victim services, did receive this memo stating that we could expect a minimum of a 30% reduction in our grants. What does this type of cut look like? I have sent to committee members a table outlining the specific agencies, communities, and the expected cuts. But just to highlight for you, first consider Anchorage and the community impact if AWAKE, STAR, Alaska Behavioral Health, Victims for Justice, and Providence Alaska Medical Center all have to absorb a $1 million cut. Rural communities are especially vulnerable. In Dillingham, SAFE and the BBAHC anticipate a $317,000 reduction. The Tundra Women's Coalition and the Monic Women's Shelters, programs that serve communities in the YK Delta, are facing a $625,000 reduction. I recently viewed the governor's video where he recognized April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we echo his call to, quote, make Alaska the safest state in the country, especially for our most vulnerable, our women and children. And a $6 million cut to grants to serve victims will not help us achieve this vision. We have consistently provided life-saving services during the pandemic. No shelter was closed. Now is not the time to cut these services to victims and survivors. And we ask for you, we appreciate all the work you're doing, appreciate your hearing from us, and we ask that you please prioritize the safety and well-being of victim survivors and consider allocating state general funds to cover these cuts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Lowry. Do you know what happened at the federal level that caused this abrupt shortfall with Fed funds?
To the co-chair, I guess that's you, I can't see. I can speak briefly to that. I don't have all the information, but I do know that the VOCA funds that are allocated to each state from the federal government are funds that come from the crime victim funds. And crime victim funds are not taxpayer funds. These are funds that are the result of fines and penalties that most of the time it's corporate criminal cases. And so these are tried as criminal cases, and then the fines go into the victim for crime victim fund. What happened a few years ago, though, is that there was a change in how some of those cases were prosecuted, and there became a greater leverage for prosecutors at the federal level to decide if they were going to prosecute criminally or prosecute civilly. So there's been a lot of these cases of corporate crime that have been prosecuted civilly, and when there's a civil prosecution, those fines go into the general treasury fund. So over the course of the few years, we've had fewer criminal convictions and fines being allocated to the federal crime victim fund. That is my understanding of what I've learned from our national partners.
Thank you, Ms. Lowry. Are there any questions? I don't see any questions of the committee, so appreciate your calling in. Next, let's move over to Tom Abbott, calling in from Petersburg. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Yeah, hi, this is Tom Abbott. I'm in Petersburg. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment today. And thank you for clearing up the static. It seems like it just cleared up recently. Appreciate that. I'm calling to ask for partial funding for public broadcasting to be restored. If not, full funding, as we've clearly, the last two state budgets, the legislature fully funded public broadcasting, only for it to be vetoed entirely twice. So perhaps partial funding would be something that everyone could get behind and support, and certainly hope that the House Finance Committee could do so, so that it goes to the Senate, full Senate Finance Committee with funding. And as I've heard other people testify prior to me, the funding for the rural public radio stations is vital. Much smaller markets, much smaller population to draw funds from, and these are locations where they are providing the only daily media of news, information, extremely important public safety information, public health information, which has been nonstop this past year with COVID and keeping everyone safe and informed about what to do. All these rural radio stations provide, you know, vital public safety alerts and potentially life-saving information, like what's happened in Haines recently. There was a slide here in Petersburg. We've had tsunami warnings here. There's a large number of these stations around the state that are the only source of information and news for those communities, including Petersburg. We have a weekly newspaper here, so only to get the news in written form days after the fact is not good governance for Alaskans. When the local radio station broadcasts the assembly meetings live, school board meetings live, provides all residents to have access to those elected officials, it's vitally important that public radio remain funded. And in these small communities, we need state government to help support it, because the state is looking, when the state needs to get out an emergency message to Alaskans, they go to public radio. And so there's sort of a responsibility and a relationship that's involved there that requires funding. So when we see, seen as a percentage of a rural station budget, these revenue losses by losing the state funding, it's been devastating for these stations.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Including Petersburg. So I'd appreciate trying to get partial funding back in, and hopefully in future budgets get full funding back in. But to keep the rural stations afloat in these times when we really need to have public information and public safety, public health information out to all Alaskans. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. Do we have any questions regarding public radio? I don't see any questions. So with that, thank you for your testimony. We'll move over to Gert Abbott calling in from Ketchikan. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hello, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can.
Hello, my name is Garrett Abbott. I live in Ketchikan, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm calling to support the full funding of Medicaid. Given you heard earlier from several of our local officials on the economic damage our town has suffered as a result of the pandemic. Well, given that economic damage, can you still hear me?
Yes, we can.
There's a popping sound. Anyway, given that economic damage, maintaining the social safety net is essential for our community. Any cuts to the public health care budget would compound the economic and human devastation that we have suffered by both increasing costs for people and expenses, health-related expenses, and just resulting in more misery and death. I very much hope the legislature will stand up against any attempts to cut these programs. Furthermore, I hope the legislature will do the necessary work to get revenue for the government through income taxes, so that at these programs will so that the healthcare system will remain secure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. I don't see any questions of the committee. We've got three more people online here. Next up is Blue Shibler from Juneau. If you can state your name, your affiliation.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My name is Blue Shibler, and I'm calling in as a decades-long early educator and advocate from Juneau. And I just wanted you to know that I'm really thankful for the inclusion of funding for early education and pre-K programs in this year's operating budget. It's been really exciting to follow multiple bills introduced this year that would move the state toward expansion of pre-K education. And because studies show that investing in pre-K education reduces the need for public spending on remedial education, criminal justice systems, and other social support programs. So it's kind of an invest now, save later. So I just wanted to say that whether or not any of the new bills move toward passage this session, I hope that the money currently included in the operating budget for early childhood education is sustained. Thank you for taking my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Scheibler. I've got a question from Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And it's not a question as much as just saying hi to Blue, and we appreciate all that she did at Discovery, and she's a very credible testifier about the importance of early education. So thank you for calling in, Blue.
Thank you. It was good to hear from you.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Next up, we have Vicki Jo Kennedy calling in from Juneau. If you can also state your name and your affiliation.
Yep, it's Vicki Jo Kennedy, and I'm still here in Juneau and just representing me. And, yeah, it's just kind of ironic that we got this storm blowing outside. We had plenty of static on the radio, sort of a lot like what's going on up there in that capital. But it just, again, this year, it just really bothers me that we've got all of us Alaskans begging for funding for essential services that are needed. Now, I know a couple of you know where I'm going with this. We have a PERM fund that was established in case the money revenues from the oil started going down. So I do not understand why we're hesitant to go into it. Well, we're going to put change on it. Oh, you betcha. But that's what it was set up for. So we didn't have to go through this. We didn't have to have roads that were deplorable and ferries. Oh, my goodness, ferries. Oh, never mind the ferries. I mean, it's just crazy. But get into that fund. We've got to go into the ERA. Instead of letting us get on this radio and basically battle each other for funding, It's sad. That's why I wanted to be last to call in today. I just, every year for the last 3 years, I've listened to this, and it just really upsets me. And I know you're going to have to implement an income tax. Like Hammond said, it's the only thing he did, took away that he regretted doing. A reasonable state sales tax would help. But in the meantime, get into that ERA. I don't care who tells you not to do it. Follow your heart. Listen to us out here begging for funding for everything that's important to everybody in every community that they've called from. So thank you for listening to me today, and have a safe trip in the storm today.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. I don't see any questions. So with that, we will go to our last testifier, and that is Joy Lyon calling in from Juneau. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good afternoon, members of the committee and co-chairs. This is Joy Lyon. I'm the executive director for the Association for the Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska. I'm here in Juneau in the storm, and I'm glad to be able to thank you today for your support in continuing stable funding for early learning programs, pre-K grants, the Head Starts, infant learning, parents as teachers, Best Beginnings Imagination Library, and childcare. All those programs are the ones out there really helping parents navigate the choppy waters and the storms of our rough seas these days, and these are the programs that are providing the safe harbors and hope to keep parents coping. And now more than ever, we need to keep them at the front of our budget and priorities to keep our families safe and healthy and stable. So thank you for continuing stable funding for those programs, and I urge you to continue that momentum and really increase the investment in pre-K. I know that the House Finance Subcommittee, the Department of Education, recommended to reappropriate some funds that were unused towards pre-K grants this year and over the next 2 years. And I urge you to make that investment, which will help our State Board of Education goals that all children read at grade level by the end of third grade. And really, those years are the brain development years, and we all know that. And everything we do to help build that foundation of children's learning will lead to their success in school and life. And so with that, I just thank you for listening today and for all of your hard work for our keeping our state strong and steady during these challenging times. And for work on a budget that will offer a better future for all Alaskans, and really especially focusing on our youngest citizens who aren't able to call in today. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Ms. Lyon, for calling in. I don't see any questions from anyone. So that will wrap up public testimony for today. So we'll close public testimony, but we'll come back to it tomorrow. I'd also like to remind folks who might be watching or listening that you can submit written public testimony by emailing us at housefinance@akleg.gov. One more time, at housefinance@akleg.gov. And we will be accepting public testimony in written form through 3 p.m. on Saturday, April 10th, so day after tomorrow. And our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow. We've got two meetings tomorrow. The first will be on April 9th at 9 a.m., and we will hear the HB 99 Physical and Occupational Therapy Practice Bill, as well as HB 117, and that extends the Board of Direct Entry Midwives. And then after that, our next meeting will be public testimony again on the budget, and that will be at 1:30 tomorrow, April 9th. And at that meeting, we'll hear from Fairbanks, Kenai, Mat-Su, Anchorage, Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, and Utqiagvik. And I am just confirming to make sure. Today we started public testimony at 2, but looks like it has been noticed for 1:30 tomorrow. So we will be starting at our regularly scheduled time at 1:30 tomorrow. And if there is nothing else to come for the committee, we will be adjourned at 3:38 p.m. Thank you.